Let's read together Romans 13, verses 1 through 7. Now, in this first half of Romans 13, we have the believer's responsibility to be subject to the governing authorities. That means paying taxes and even obeying speed limits. Romans 13, beginning at verse 1. Let every soul be subject to the governing authorities. For there is no authority except from God, and the authorities that exist are appointed by God. Therefore, whoever resists the authority resists the ordinance of God, and those who resist will bring judgment on themselves. For rulers are not a terror to good works, but to evil. Do you want to be unafraid of the authority? Do what is good, and you will have praise from the same. For he is God's minister to you for good. But if you do evil, be afraid, for he does not bear the sword in vain. For he is God's minister, an avenger to execute wrath on him who practices evil. Therefore, you must be subject not only because of wrath, but also for conscience sake. For because of this, you also pay taxes, for they are God's ministers attending continually to this very thing. Render, therefore, to all their due, taxes to whom taxes are due, customs to whom customs, fear to whom fear, honor to whom honor. All right, let's begin this first half of Romans 13 with some background notes. Romans chapters 12 through 16 is the practical application division of Paul's letter to the Romans. In chapter 12 of Romans, we are exhorted to present our bodies as living sacrifices in service to our Lord Jesus. Furthermore, in chapter 12, we are told how to relate to fellow believers in the church, as well as how to relate to unbelievers in society. Now in chapter 13, we learn that believers are to be subject to the higher governing authorities. Now, as most of you know, when the Apostle Paul wrote these words, a Christian government was not in power in Rome. In fact, it was a pagan government. And Nero was the Roman emperor. It was under Nero that Paul was martyred for being a Christian. And yet, even with Nero on the throne, Paul is inspired to write these words, let every soul be subject to the governing authorities. So that brings us then to our doctrinal points for this first half of Romans 13. And doctrinal or teaching point number one is believers must submit to governing authorities. Believers must submit to governing authorities. Why? Well, at least two good reasons are given here. Reason number one, they are ordained of God. Governing authorities are ordained of God. Verses 1 and 2. Let every soul be subject to the governing authorities, for there is no authority except from God, and the authorities that exist are appointed by God. Therefore, whoever resists the authority resists the ordinance of God. All authority finds its source in God. But God has chosen to channel his authority down to us, to mankind, in four different lines of authority. There is the line of authority in the home. There is the line of authority in the church. There is the line of authority in the area of labor. And then fourth, there is the line of civil authority in reference to government. And that's the line of authority that we have here in Romans 13. Now, what is our responsibility to these and in these lines of authority? Submit. Even when we don't like what the authority demands, we submit. Does anyone here like to pay taxes? Think of the illustration of Mary and Joseph. They traveled more than 75 miles during Mary's time of pregnancy over rough roads to be registered for the purpose of taxation. Remember what our Lord Jesus said in Matthew chapter 22. Render unto Caesar the things that are Caesar's, and unto God the things that are God's. Verse 7 here in Romans 13. Render therefore to all their due, taxes to whom taxes are due, customs to whom customs, fear to whom fear, honor to whom honor. Honor to whom honor here does not mean that we approve of wrongdoing in government officials, but we respect the office because we recognize that it's an authority structure that's ordained of God. Like we used to say in the military service, you salute the office, not necessarily the officer, all right? You honor the line of authority. We submit even when we disagree with the authority and think the authority is wrong. That includes building codes, government red tape to set up a business, even set up a ministry, and speed limits. Some time ago, I had a Christian man tell me that he did not obey the speed limit because he disagreed with it. And not only that, his car ran more efficiently at a higher speed, and he was conserving what the Lord had given him. Can you believe it? I mean, where do you get that out of the Bible, right? The only time we disobey governing authorities is when they command us to do something that God condemns, or they refuse to let us do something that God commands. Then we follow the principle of Acts 5:29. We ought to obey God rather than man. That is, we obey the higher authority. But we don't revolt and shoot the police that come to arrest us. Even here, we are subject to the governing authorities. If we disagree with the powers that be, we may write or protest. In fact, the church functions as the conscience of the state. You remember John the Baptist rebuked Herod, but at the same time, he submitted, even to the point of death. 1 Peter chapter 2, verses 13 and 14 say, "Therefore submit yourselves to every ordinance of man for the Lord's sake, whether to the king as supreme or to governors as to those who are sent by him for the punishment of evildoers and for the praise of those who do good." Now that brings us to the second reason why believers must submit to governing authorities. They are the servants of God. Governing authorities are the servants of God. Look at verses 3 and 4. "For rulers are not a terror to good works, but to evil. Do you want to be unafraid of the authority? Do what is good, and you will have praise from the same, for he is God's minister to you for good." And verse 6, "For because of this you also pay taxes, for they," that is the governing authorities, "are God's ministers, attending continually to this very thing." How are government officials the servants of God? Well, the idea here, of course, is not that every police person or tax collector or government official is a Christian, but they are used of God to restrain evil and give structure to society. Verses 4 and 5 here show us that God can use the governing authorities to discipline us. Verse 4, "But if you do evil, be afraid, for he," that is the government official or authority, "does not bear the sword in vain, for he is God's minister or servant, an avenger to execute wrath on him who practices evil. Therefore, you must be subject, not only because of wrath, but also for conscience sake." If we wrongly disobey the governing authorities, the penalty we pay is from God because of the line of authority that God has set up. Its source is God. So the next time you get a speeding ticket, remember that it is not just given to you by the state trooper. It's coming from God. Now, you don't necessarily have to tell the state trooper, "Thanks for being such a willing servant of the Lord." You have to say that. But I think you recognize what we're dealing with here, the structure of authority. Now, even aside from getting caught, we should obey for conscience sake. Verse 5, "Therefore, you must be subject not only because of wrath, but also for conscience sake." You have a good conscience in this area? Remember what the Bible teaches here. Believers must submit to governing authorities. Doctrinal or teaching point number 2, capital punishment has a biblical basis. Capital punishment has a biblical basis. Verse 4, "But if you do evil, be afraid, for he does not bear the sword in vain." Now the sword here is not just a symbol of the state. It is the God-given right of the government to maintain law and order, even to the point of imposing the death penalty. But wait a minute, you say. I thought the Bible said in Exodus 20, verse 13, "Thou shalt not kill." Yes, the Bible does say that. But the word that's used there refers to murder, not capital punishment. But what about the argument that capital punishment was part of the Mosaic law in the Old Testament, and the law has ended with the coming of Christ? Doesn't that do away with a biblical basis for capital punishment today? No, for two reasons. Reason number one, the biblical basis for capital punishment goes before the law. Genesis 9:6 is the biblical basis for capital punishment. Whoever sheds man's blood, by man his blood shall be shed, for in the image of God he made man. Genesis 9:6 is part of the Noahic covenant, made with man after the flood, before the law of Moses. The Noahic covenant was made for all mankind and is still in effect today. Now you see, if you make the Mosaic covenant the basis for capital punishment, you have a problem. Under the law, there was not only the death penalty for murder, but also for adultery and homosexuality and witchcraft, and even for a rebellious teenager. Well, then how can you still be for capital punishment? Well, you see, all of these things are still sin, but we don't believe the governing authorities have any biblical basis for imposing capital punishment for these sins. But murder is different, because the biblical basis for capital punishment goes all the way back, you see, to Genesis 9:6. And it's never been lifted. Reason number two, the biblical basis for capital punishment is affirmed in Romans 13, verse 4, once again. But if you do evil, be afraid, for he does not bear the sword in vain, for he is God's minister and avenger to execute wrath on him who practices evil. So here the New Testament affirms that there is still a biblical basis for capital punishment. The Bible is not for capital punishment because of a low view of life, but rather because of a high view of life, the sanctity of life. God's view of life is so high. Man created in the image of God. If you dare to take life, you forfeit your own life. Capital punishment has a biblical basis. Now, one quick practical application from this first half of Romans 13. Let's not fall into the trap of separation between church and state. Let's not fall into the trap of separation between church and state. Now, as Christians, we recognize that there is a separation between church and state because they are two different lines of authority. But we don't fall into the trap of separating between God and the state, as the liberal mindset would do, and as the media would have us do. They want to separate all moral matters from the state and say, for example, that the state cannot make laws against abortion because we have to separate between the church and the state. Watch out for that trap. Separation between state and church, yes. Separation between state and God, no. Both answer to God. Both are lines of authority coming down from God himself. Let's not fall into the trap of separation between church and state.